You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLemon.
Hi, and welcome to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Now, one thing I think we all deal with at one point or another during our journey as women and perhaps partners and parents, and especially as business owners, is negative self-talk. And of course, this kind of talk doesn't do anything to help us propel us towards our success, but actually instead stands in our way, acting as a barrier to the life and the business we truly desire. In today's episode, I'm talking with Bree Steadman, the female head talk expert and founder of the program and podcast, as well as an author of the same titled book, Own Your BS. In our discussion, Bree uncovers how to identify our own BS, some strategies to get rid of it, and how this opens the door to opportunity. Let's dive right in. Bree, thank you so much for joining me on the Salon Owners Collective podcast. I'm really pleased to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited.
Now, look, let's start by telling us where you are in the world, but what is it that you do, and how did you get to be doing what you're doing today?
Such a big question. So I'm from Newcastle, New South Wales in Australia. That's the easy part. What I do now, I'm a female head talk expert. So I help women to break through the negative self-talk and turn that into emotional control. Now, the way that I came into being the female head talk expert is a very long and complicated journey, like many of our life journeys. So if I was to rewind to 2012, that was really the pivotal changing point for my life. Prior to that, so in the lead up to 2012, I was a director in a large multinational direct selling company. From the outside, and I know that many women are going to relate to this, I had that polished, perfected appearance down packed, you know, regardless of what was going on at home. I could switch the smile on and switch on the positive attitude, and, you know, the whole fake it till you make it kind of mantra was the way that I lived my life. So professionally, I'd built up this really great business. I, you know, earned the free cars and the overseas trips and the diamonds and all of the rest of it. And I remember in the lead up to 2012, standing on stage, being recognised at our annual award for being, you know, an up and coming performer, and standing there looking around at my peers thinking, I do not feel like I belong here. Like, everyone else is so much better than me. I'm unworthy of where I'm at. And sooner or later, everyone's going to start to see that I'm actually very fraudulent, because that's ultimately how I felt. I felt so unworthy of the success that I'd achieved. So sort of spent a large chunk of time pretending that I had my shit together, but disguising a lot of dramas that were going on in my own headspace in regards to my own sense of worth, and also in my home environment. So I was a young mum. I had two kids, one in 2007, one in 2009. So in the lead up to 2012, my eldest was only 4 years old. And what no one saw from the professional perspective was the aggressive, abusive mum that I was behind closed doors. So I hid a very big secret behind the polished facade of I am professional and I am successful, but at home I was an abusive, out of control mama. So yeah, things really had to change. And in 2012, I sort of hit rock bottom and became very scared of what I was capable of in regards to mothering, and also at the same time, very disconnected from the person that I was portraying. I sort of felt like I was just putting on a mask and faking who I thought everyone wanted me to be, and it was tearing me apart. So 2012, I had enough. I recognized that in order for me to be the mum that my kids deserved me to be, I needed to sort my shit out. And in order for me to be growing an authentic business that felt easy and aligned with who I was, I had to drop the facade. I had to stop faking it and just really embrace who I was in every dimension. So that's what I did.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. It was big, but it was really, I'm actually so grateful for that entire journey. You know, obviously if I could rewind time and maybe not behave in the way that I did, then I would do. But at the same time, I'm so grateful that I went through that process, because it was such a wake up call of you know, I was only 30 at the time. And I remember thinking, if this is what life is at 30, and I hate being a mum, I hate this role that I've sort of put myself in, I can't fake it for another 30 or 40 years. So, you know, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to drop this shit so I can just become who I know I can be?
It's amazing. And so what was the breaking point? Like what made you tip over the edge and make the change?
Look, I think there were two things. On the personal front, there was a moment when both of my kids were playing in the lounge room and I walked up behind them, you know, just to sort of have general chit-chat with them and sort of interact with them, and their instinct was to flinch away from me because that was, you know, that was their protective nature trying to overcome the big bad mama that I'd become. So that was a real slap in the face because it was like, shit, you know, if my kid's instinct is to flinch, then I'm doing something incredibly wrong. And I didn't want that. That sort of fell in alignment with that whole recognition of where I was not where I wanted to be. I really hated that space that I'd put myself in. Second to that, I was really done with the whole consistent merry-go-round of, you know, talking to the girls that I worked with and constantly feeling like I was the counsellor, like that I had to pick them up and lift them up all of the time and not really have strategies and skills to genuinely make a difference in their lives. So I felt so unfulfilled in so many ways that I just, you know, it's that cold, hard slap of reality that said, if something's going to change, you're the only one that can make it happen. So I reevaluated, I sorted my own shit out and then looked at the industry that I was in and went, what I'm really passionate about is helping women to live their best lives, and just slapping on some makeup is not doing it for me. Like, I really want to get deep with what's going on for these women so that they're not just faking it all of the time, they can actually embrace who they are as individuals.
Yeah, for sure. I can totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I love the analogy of not just slapping on the makeup, but actually getting inside their head and making a difference. So how did you become the female head talker? What was the transition and what became? How did this arrive?
So, again, if I sort of backdated a little bit, in the lead up to 2012, I was on a personal development journey, which I think a lot of women are. You know, I knew there was things missing in my life, so I was hungry to better understand myself. And in early 2012, I connected with a lady named Marilyn Shermer. She had an institute called the Institute of Women International, and she was very much about the gender specifics of being female. So she'd studied the female brain, our hormone cycles, and started to recognize that everything that women were trying to do to fill themselves up was not actually designed for women. So the majority of the self-help books that are available, majority of self-help programs, counseling processes, therapy processes, the majority of everything that we try to do to better understand ourselves and to improve ourselves have been developed on male brains, on how a male brain sees and processes the world. So Maz introduced me to that, you know, the female factor, that is being able to understand how the female brain works. And once I heard it, I was like, no wonder so many women are stuck constantly trying to be better than they are. We're trying to, you know, put a square peg in a round hole. And it's scary. And this was the one thing that really turned my thinking around in regards to personal development. It was only in 1993, which is only going back, you know, 25 years, that in 1993 they mandated that studies on female brains must be included in scientific studies of the brains. Up until 1993, all studies that were done on a brain were done on male brains or baby male castrated mice. So studies for female brains were based on how a baby male rat processed and you know, went through the science tests and things. So 1993, I know, and it gets worse because so 1993, they said, this is it. Female brains must be studied because lo and behold, female brains are not just smaller versions of male brains. They are actually very different. Who knew? What's scary is even now, so we're now in 2018 and less than 16% of studies include female brains.
The bit that baffles me actually is the fact that they decided to exclude them in the first place, or that they even potentially weren't excluding but chose to only study one type of brain in the first place.
That's because female brains are so much more complex, and financially it was simpler to study the more stabilized brain. So if we look at, you know, one of the most significant differences between males and females is the fact that women have ever fluctuating hormone cycles. Mm. And because our hormones fluctuate every hour of every day, from the day we start puberty right up and through until the day we die, because our environment, our stable brain environment, is not in fact stable, it was too difficult for them to get consistent results. So it was really only in the 90s when they started to actually connect to the dots and go, shit, hang on a minute, maybe these hormones actually play a really significant, you know, significant role in how women process the world.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so what I do now as a female head talk expert is firstly, you know, help women to understand where the head talk is coming from, but secondly, link it to the fact that as a woman, and particularly as a woman in business, this is like so important for us to understand. There are natural days in your cycle where you are not going to be as driven, as switched on, as able to communicate, receive, or send a, you know, a communicative message as other days of the month. And because we live in this, you know, very masculine modeled world of 5 days on, 2 days off, we're going against the grain of who we are as women. So as a business owner, if you can start to become really aware of what your cycle's actually doing, you can anticipate when you're going to have a slump a couple of days, and you can anticipate when you're going to be really switched on and make the most of that productivity.
Wow, that's an amazing concept to me.
I know, not many women do it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I can't wait to hear more of what you've got to share with us today.
What would you like to know?
Now, before you do and tell us all about it, what does your life look like in business now? Tell us a little bit about how you work with people. What does that look like? A day in the life, a month in the life since we've been
a month in the life of free. So it's very fluid. You know, something that really drives me is location freedom. So me being able to choose where I want to work is incredibly important to me, and something that also supports flexibility, because that is who we are as women. So I work exclusively with my clients online now. I've got two programs that I offer. I've got a program which is my baby, Own Your BS. So that is an online program that women can pace themselves through to better understand their head talk, and not just understand it, but actually look at it and go, right, if this is what I'm saying to myself, if I'm saying I'm not good enough, or if I'm worrying what other people think, or if I'm, you know, scared of failure, which so many women in business are, what can I do when I recognize those habits of thinking to actually bring me back into a state of emotional control that allows me to move forward? So that is the whole goal of Own Your BS. It's a tool-based informative program that gives you back control of your thinking, and that's all done online. The other way that I work with women is one-on-one with a personalized breakthrough process. And I'm blessed. I've got women that I work with all the way from New Zealand to Canada and across Australia. So very much online and accessible to everyone all around the world, pretty much, which is really exciting.
I love that, and it because it suits everybody, right?
It does. It does. And because I do work from home, I can, you know, offer multitude of hours. So, you know, knowing time differences, which I'm finally, after, you know, 4.5 years, getting my head around time differences around the world. It means that I can choose, you know, if I have a late night appointment, the following morning I might have a little bit more of a relaxed day. Or what I aim to do is work every morning sort of after school drop off, because both of my kids are at school now. They're 11 and nearly 9. So I drop my kids off at school. I come home, I work for, you know, 4 hours or so, and then I give myself a break in the middle of the day where I can just come back to me, do whatever I need to do. If it's, you know, tinkering and pottering around in my business, awesome. If it's just, you know, if I'm at that time of the month where I need some nurturing, then I've got the flexibility to do that. And then I pick my kids up. I spend a few hours with them doing the family thing. And then of a night time, I work again. So it's a very strict day, but it's something that works right now for my family.
Yeah. Nice. All right. I'm really interested to sort of unpackage this idea of understanding your cycle and your hormones, and better understanding what works for you when, why sometimes it feels like you're pushing shit uphill, and other times it's, you know, it's all go and everything's working nicely. So take us through that a little bit.
So I'll just give you a bit of a summary. The first thing that I really want the listeners to really understand is when I'm talking about your hormones, I'm not exclusively talking about your period. So many women connect their period to hormones. So if you don't have a period, you know, women will go, well, I don't have a period because maybe I'm on the pill, or maybe I take some form of contraception that stops my period, therefore hormones don't apply to me. If you've got more mature listeners, you know, we flip it and we go, well, I'm going through perimenopause, so my hormones are all out of whack, or I've already been through menopause, therefore I don't have a cycle, so it doesn't apply to me, which is just BS. From little girls, from the age of 0 to 6 months, we don't do much in terms of our hormones. From 6 months through to 24 months old, we have an estrogen surge. 24 months, that surge drops down again and we stay stable up until the day, you know, that puberty starts, which nowadays, really frightening, starts from around 9 years old. So from nine right up until after even menopause, you've got this ebb and flow of estrogen and progesterone, and depending on where the levels of your estrogen and progesterone sit will change the way that you see the world. So in a typical cycle, and we do kind of use our periods as the marking point, but if you don't have a period, you would just choose today to be the day you start tracking what a cycle looks like to you. And we're looking for things like sleep even. You know, there are days of the month where you feel like you could sleep 12 hours and still need another six. And then there are other days of the month where you can function very well on just 6 hours of sleep or even less. That is indicative of what your hormones are doing. You've also got your ability to be able to communicate. You know, as our progesterone and estrogen levels drop at the end of a cycle, our thought process start to slow down. And it's almost like we lose our ability to communicate because we don't want to talk. We just want to come back into self and settle things down a little bit. So you can look at things like the way that you speak, the way that you understand a message that's being spoken to you, and the way that you can then tell that message back. That's indicative of your cycle as well. We've also got things like your appetite, your energy levels, and of course your head talk and your emotions. So my advice for everyone is to start tracking, you know, just one or two aspects of your cycle. Maybe start to track your emotions, because there's going to be days in your month where you feel naturally more confident, and then there's going to be days of your month where you feel very insecure. And rather than beating yourself up about those insecurities, if you can recognize that it's just part of your cycle and it's only going to last a couple of days, then you can kind of ride that wave with a little bit more self-acceptance.
Yeah, for sure. You don't have to think that the whole world is over, because trust that in a couple of days you're going to see things differently.
Yeah, and also trust that there's nothing wrong with you. You know, so many women think there's something wrong because you're having a couple of crazy days. You know, I know for me, I go into a state of overwhelm. In the few days before I would get a period, everything just feels like such a big deal. And if I try and do too much at once, which quite often I've got more than one plate juggling, but if I try and focus on everything, I go into a state of overwhelm and I shut down. So when you recognize these habits of emotions, you can then start, you know, working with them rather than trying to fight against them.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and one of the best ways is you know, clearly I link everything back to head talk. So start to track what your head talk is actually doing as well. So your head talk is, you know, those messages, those thoughts that you're having that you wouldn't actually say to anyone else. And again, I'm going to assume that there's a lot of women out here that are maybe on a personal development journey of some sort. So maybe you've read some things about, you know, the law of attraction or positive thinking and mantras and affirmations. Mantras and affirmations are great. At one time of the month, you're going to believe them. You know, I used to have, when I was a crazy psycho mama, my favorite mantra was, I'm a calm and confident mum. And there'd be some days of the month where I'd almost believe it. Be like, yeah, I think today I've got this. I can do this mum thing. But then there'd be other days of the month where my head talk would go, bullshit, Brie, you are so full of it. But you are the furthest thing from calm and confident. So that is the head talk that is actually very destructive, and it's the head talk that all women need to start harnessing, because while ever you've got this negative thought, So let's say we'll use me as an example. You've got that mantra of I'm a calm and confident mum, but my head talk is saying bullshit, Bree. That head talk, that is your truth. And that truth is linked to the emotional state that you're feeling. So in that example for me, that's linking, you know, not good enough. I can't do it. I'm doubting myself. I'm insecure. That internal dialogue is driving then your behaviors.
Mm.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
First thing is just be mindful of the fact that you do have a cycle. And the more you start to master it, you can then start to plan your business around it. But let's just, you know, business set aside, this is about you becoming the most authentic and genuine version of you that you can be, so that you can then create success from you outward, whether it's in your personal relationships or whether it's in your business world. So start just being mindful of the fact that you do in fact have a cycle, and it's not just your period that we're tracking. We're tracking, you know, other parts of you as well. And secondly, and most importantly, start being mindful of what it is that you're saying to yourself. Most women have head talk, and most women don't know what to do with it. So what I encourage women to do is take the time every day to start listing out those thoughts that you're telling yourself. So actually start writing those thoughts down on a piece of paper. When you write them down, so you might have, is there a common story that you catch yourself saying to yourself? Maybe it's, I'm overwhelmed, I can't do this, I can't juggle everything that I'm trying to do right now. Is there something that you personally say to yourself on a frequent basis that you're happy to share?
I have a funny relationship with time.
Okay.
I can't seem to master my time, which then puts me into overwhelm.
Excellent. So your dialogue might go, I don't have enough hours in the day. I don't even know where to start. I've got so much to do. Where do I begin? Is that kind of common for you?
Yes. I have a really good process to get myself out of there, but I keep having the reoccurring pattern of getting myself back into that. And so my question to myself is, do I need to learn to say no to things? How do I, I don't know what the gap is, but somehow I haven't been able to master time relating to overwhelm.
This is a perfect example, because what you're trying to do is make your thought processes logical. Now, if you were a man, that would work beautifully, because male brains are traditionally a lot more logical than female brains. We are more emotional. Our brains are more emotional. We've got larger limbic systems, which is the emotional control center of the brain. So when you're trying to make, you know, a logical step-by-step process, you're actually missing the most important aspect of all of that, which is the way that you're feeling. So you said you've got a funny relationship with time. So you would start to list down everything that you're thinking about time on a piece of paper. That does bring in the logical piece of the brain, which does allow you to start to create some space from the thought. So writing your thoughts down on a piece of paper is always the first step, because it helps you to see what it is that's actually going on in your head. But then we want to get a little bit more female with it. So based on all of those thoughts, what does it make you feel? Now, you've said you feel overwhelmed, correct?
Yes. When I get time pressured, I go into overwhelm with all the things on the list.
Okay. Excellent.
Well, the challenge is, like, I know how to get out, I can organize all the things, so I can do the logical part. But the challenge I have is, why do I keep putting myself back into the loop of overwhelm, which means I have to climb out again?
Yes, because overwhelm's not actually being addressed. That is why you keep going back into the loop. So if we look at the way the female brain processes things, every thought that we have is connected to an emotion. So in the thoughts that you have around time, the second that that thought comes into your consciousness, your unconscious mind goes, oh, here she comes again. She's going back into overwhelm. And then your unconscious mind goes, yeah, and remember yesterday when she felt overwhelmed? And it reminds you everything that you did yesterday, last week, last month, last year, that causes you to feel overwhelmed. And all of this happens at an unconscious level. Because you then go into a state of overwhelm, the thoughts that you continue to have feed that loop of overwhelm. So what we need to do in order to break the loop is actually address the emotion. And this is the female side of things. So is it okay if I play with you right now and I'll actually share a strategy to help you break the overwhelm?
Yes. Who doesn't want to break overwhelm? Go for it.
Who doesn't want to break it? And this is something that I'd encourage you to do. You can do this strategy with any emotion. any head talk that comes up, anything that gets in your way of living your best life, identify what the thoughts are, bring it back to the feeling, and then you're going to do this little strategy now. So when you think about overwhelm, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strongly can you feel overwhelmed, 10 being the most intense?
I'm going to say 7.
A 7, okay.
Yep.
And where in your body does overwhelm live?
Oh, I know that. It's chest and shoulders and neck.
Chest, shoulders and neck, okay. Yep. And if overwhelm was a colour, what colour would it be?
Funnily, it's yellow, but even though that's my favourite colour.
Okay. So overwhelm is yellow and it lives...
Today it's yellow, yes.
Yep, perfect. Mm-hmm. So it's yellow and it lives in your chest, shoulders and neck, and you can feel it at about a 7 out of 10.
Yep.
Okay. Do you want to let overwhelm go?
Oh, yes, please. Okay. And I have to say that, you know, it used to, in my old life, it used to be way up in 10, at a 10.
Yes.
I feel like... You know, it's manageable, but I'd like to actually kick it off, get rid of it, please. Let's go for it.
Okay. So what I want you to do, I invite you to close your eyes and I want you to imagine a deflated yellow balloon.
Okay.
Tell me when you can see that deflated yellow balloon.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on the floor.
What we're going to do, okay, we're going to take 3 big deep breaths. And every breath in, we're going to bring overwhelm out of the chest, shoulders and neck. We're going to breathe it up into the breath and then we're going to exhale and we're going to blow it into that yellow balloon. So you're going to watch your balloon get bigger and bigger and bigger with each breath, okay?
Okay.
So let's take a big deep breath in now and bring all of the overwhelm out of the chest, shoulders and neck into your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And then exhale and blow it into that balloon and watch the yellow balloon start to get filled.
Yep.
Now take another big deep breath and bring all the overwhelm out of the chest, shoulders and neck into the breath. Exhale and blow it out into the balloon and watch the balloon get bigger again. Now one last breath. You make sure you bring every teeny tiny little bit of overwhelm out of the chest, shoulders and neck into the breath and then exhale and blow it all out into the balloon. How big is your balloon?
It's pretty big. It's nearly hitting the roof.
Excellent. I want you to pop it.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Okay. Now, if we've moved overwhelm out of the body into the balloon and then popped the balloon, where did the overwhelm go?
Kind of went towards the window.
Okay.
It's on its way out.
It's on its way out. And how do you feel about overwhelm now?
Well, it's further away from me.
Mm-hmm. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how strongly can you feel it now?
Yeah, I guess it's not really here right now.
Okay.
I sound surprised.
So now that the I know. So now that the overwhelm is gone, you then look back at all of those thoughts that you've written down on paper and go, right, what am I going to do with it now? Now, in your instance of time, you would look at all of that and go, right, what am I going to do right now? What is the next, you know, practical step that I need to take in order to move, you know, my day forward? And because overwhelm has been addressed, the decision becomes so much easier to implement as well. So then we can action it.
Because, in fact, you're just moving the emotion attached to it away so you can get back to being logical. Is this
well, kind of... Yeah, so what's actually happening is because the mind, whatever the mind sees, the body believes. And because the female brain is so connected to emotion, when we create an image about that emotion. So we created an image of you blowing an emotion into a balloon and then we disperse the balloon. So the body has no choice but to let go of the hold on the emotion. And because we're starting to neurologically redefine what that emotion looks like to you. So instinctively now at an unconscious level, when your brain thinks overwhelm, it's going straight to that yellow balloon that has now been dispersed and is you know, passing out through the window. So it's not connecting it physiologically to your chest, shoulders and neck. And so the more you do that, you're actually starting to break the relationship between the thought and the way that it shows up in your body being your emotion.
Yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? Exactly, completely and physically removing it.
Yep.
Away from you and disconnecting it from you. It's such a simple exercise, yet so very powerful.
It is. And it's something that I, you know, I've got this big vision, and this is why I love working with mums in particular, whether you're a mum in business or just a mum who wants more for yourself. When you have strategies like this, you can then start to teach your kids how to be emotionally resilient, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what's going on in life. It doesn't matter what circumstances are happening to you. You ultimately always have control over how you feel about them. And if it's not making you feel good, when you have strategies like this one, and these are the strategies that I teach, you know, in your BS, then every time you go into a space that's not serving you, you've got something that you can do to diffuse the emotion and get back to what you can control.
And this would work beautifully with children, actually doing it with your children.
Oh, kids love it.
Yeah.
Really, and kids are amazing. Like, you know, I often have mums say, so do I need to buy a whole heap of balloons? No. No, you don't. You have an endless supply of balloons in your head at all times.
That's
right.
It's
a matter of using them when you recognise that something's not serving you. So when you feel overwhelmed, blow a balloon. When you're feeling frustrated, blow a balloon. When you're feeling angry or upset or sad, blow a balloon. Every single time you blow a balloon, you're telling your unconscious mind that you are breaking the cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. I can actually imagine doing that. You know, the old 5 o'clock explosion at the house when everyone's hangry.
And
the challenge for me is keeping my cool until I can get the food on the table.
Yep.
I just had this vision of me blowing up my little anger balloon and just sort of popping it out the window and just letting it go and deflate out there. And it's like, go away. I got this.
Yep.
I totally can do that.
Yeah, and the good thing about teaching it to your kids as well, I don't know whether it's a blessing or not, but I taught my daughter, clearly I taught both of my kids how to do this when I mastered it, you know, back in 2012, 2013 when I started learning this. My first goal was to teach my family because, it, you know, although my behaviour fed into their behaviour, they also had their own, you know, little challenges as well. So now if I do happen to have a frustrated day, which happens, you know, both of my kids are also special needs kids, so they're quite full on with, you know, their various demands. So when I'm having a frustrated day, for example, my daughter comes up to me and says, "Mummy, what colour is the balloon? Let's glow a balloon." Oh. And I'm like, "Just go away, leave me alone."
That was your balloon today.
I don't want to let it go. I want to feel frustrated. So that's why I asked you as well, do you want to let it go?
Mm.
Because until you make that decision to let it go, you are choosing to hold on to it. And only you can let it go.
Okay. So that's actually a really pivotal question.
It is, yeah.
What do you say to people who aren't ready to recognize that they have the power to let it go or want to? I mean, what does it serve us when we don't want to let these things go?
Yeah, so one question that's really great to ask yourself is, what is it costing me to hang on to it?
Mm.
But the reality is, not everybody is ready to let it go, because if it's, for example, if it's something that attracts attention, you know, if you're feeling insecure or doubtful or not good enough, and you go to a certain girlfriend that says, you know, I suck at business and I'm so scared that things aren't going to work, and she strokes your ego by saying, but you're so amazing, you can do this, you know, get out there. If you're, if the desire to, hang on, how do I word this better? If the problem is giving you something of service, such as attention, then the need to let it go is not as great as the cost of having it.
Yes, that's right. Because if you let it go, you no longer get your ego stroked for in this particular example.
Yeah, yeah. So, and this is why, you know, my brand is Own Your BS, because you are the only one who can own it, and only you can decide when you're ready to own it. It's kind of like, I relate it back to being an alcoholic. You know, if you were to come across an alcoholic girlfriend and take her to rehab clinic, if she doesn't really want to break that habit, she's going to come out of rehab and go straight back to her old habits, because there's a greater service being met. So we can't help anyone else. We are not responsible for anyone else. So even in my kids' examples, you know, I want the best for them, but when they're angry and they don't want to let it go, then that's their choice. So I say to them, okie dokie, well, when you're ready, come back and see me and I'll help you out. But until that point, off you go to your bedroom, because no one else needs to be dealing with this right now.
Yeah.
So I call it sitting in your shit. Sometimes you just have to sit in your shit until you're done with it.
I love that. Yep, for sure. Okay. Yes, I have to think about that sentence at my home.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, it's, you know, I think, you know, people say to me all the time, you know, what makes you so different? And I think I've just started to realize that what I do really well is I call people on their bullshit and I'm okay to be a bitch. So I'm a bit of a bullshit bitch, I think, but I'm okay with that because if I say to you, okay, well, darling, I'm sorry that you're feeling like that. What are you going to do about it? And you say, I don't want to do anything about it right now. That's your call, not mine. And I'm not responsible for what happens in your life if you choose to stay in that space. All I can do is support you from a distance and say, okay, well, when you're ready, there's help available to you. But up until that point, this is your decision. Therefore, you go live it.
Nobody's too young to have that kind of tough love, right?
Not at all. I've been talking to my kids about this. And like I said, I mean, both of my kids have got challenges. But the one thing that keeps coming through is all of the specialist appointments that we have with the kids. The one thing that every specialist sees is my kids' emotional resiliency and their emotional intelligence. Yeah. They know that if something's not serving them, they have access to strategies to empower themselves when they are ready to do it.
I think that's the goal to winning. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that is the philosophy of Own Your BS. That's why I love it so much. It's, and you know, the tools that are taught in Own Your BS are just there to give you back control of life when life happens.
Yeah.
You know, there are other things that you can do to release the actual charge of the emotion from where it's held in your body long term. That's what I do with my clients when I work with them one-on-one, but not everybody's even ready for that. So that's why I created Own Your BS, because what most people want are the strategies to get back control when they choose to have it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, before we move towards wrapping up, I've just got a quick question around reoccurring challenges.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking about the hair and beauty business owners that are listening to this. When we have challenges that keep reoccurring, the same challenge keeps rearing its ugly head, what can be said, or what is the strategy that we can think about or take action with when we can recognize that actually I keep reoccurring, this same thing keeps happening to me? What are your thoughts around that?
Okay, so this might ruffle a few feathers, but I'm going to say it anyway. In any reoccurring circumstance of life, you are always the common denominator. So if you've got reoccurring, you know, let's keep it in the business world, if you have reoccurring problems coming in regards to maybe difficult clients, or if you have reoccurring financial issues that keep happening, you are the common denominator with that reoccurring shit. So what is it that you believe about that situation? That belief is what's attracting it again. So an example would be, let's say there's financial hardships that keep cycling over and over again. You know, every month you go through the same dramas of financial hardship. What do you believe about money? What is your relationship with that reoccurring financial pattern? Now, if your thoughts are things like, I hate money, or as soon as I get paid, money goes straight back out the door, or, you know, money is hard. If you've got belief systems like that, then remember, your unconscious mind, every time you're thinking money is hard, your unconscious mind is going to find a whole heap of examples to prove why money is hard. Like reoccurring issues that keep reinforcing the fact that you believe money is hard. So this is why your head talk is so powerful. When you can recognize the thoughts and beliefs that you hold and start to break those thoughts, then you can start to see new potentials, new opportunities that are available that you're not currently able to see because the belief is dictating what's seen.
Yep. Okay. This would be true around staff issues or team challenges that keep reoccurring. And it came to my mind, you know, you said, well, write these things down on a regular basis. Even if you're writing down your belief that, you know, these other people are so challenging, if you start to recognize a common belief or common thought that keeps reoccurring, reappearing, it's time to take a look at it.
Yeah. Yep. So in the example of, say, staff, if you keep having issues and your thoughts are, my staff members are just so lazy. They just can't see beyond the next task. You know, they don't use their initiative. They're not using their common sense to do what needs to be done without being told. If these are the thoughts that you're having, then you're just going to keep attracting those kind of people. because that's what you're telling yourself. So write down, you know, and a really great exercise that you could even do is to write down everything that you actually believe that you see in your staff right now, their lack of initiative, their laziness, whatever it might be. And then on a fresh piece of paper, start listing down what you want from your staff. So often we focus on everything we don't want that we forget to actually look for what we do want. So if you can bring your attention back to, you know, the next staff member that I attract will use her initiative. She won't just wait to be told what to do. She'll be able to look around her and see what needs to get done because she is eager, she is driven, she's ambitious, whatever it might be. If you can get clear on what you want in your life and then listen to the bullshit that's underneath it. Okay, this is that, you know, that affirmation sort of thing that I was talking about. If you say, I want a staff member who uses her initiative, and your head talk says, but they're all lazy, that is the belief that needs to be addressed.
I can't
find anybody.
Does
it make sense? So it's very much, I can't find anyone. That's the truth that you're actually believing. I can't find anyone, because there are people out there. You're just not going to attract it because you don't truly believe that they're there.
And that it actually affects the actions that we then choose to take.
Exactly. So it all comes back to us. You know, the quality of the life that we live is ultimately in our hands. And it's not always an easy pill to swallow, particularly if you currently find yourself in a pretty bad space. You know, when I was abusing my kids, recognizing that I was the common denominator in their behavior and in the circumstances that we kept facing, and then actually listening to what I believed about it, my truth was that I hated being a mum. Now, when I heard that truth come forward, I can tell you it was not a pleasant day. It was one of the hardest days I've ever experienced. However, it was also one of the most empowering, because as soon as I heard that truth, it's like, right, what am I going to do about this? My kids are now 4 and 2. I've got at least another 20 years of these kids being like quite closely connected with me. Am I going to spend 20 years of hating this role, or am I going to do something to sort that shit out? Clearly,
Clearly you chose the right path. And I just love that you can just speak and own it so easily, because that surely was not an easy process.
No, well, it became an easy process when I started to work with my female brain. Up until that point, it was challenging because I was trying to make it logical. You know, I was trying to, you know, force that I loved being a mum. And it wasn't. I couldn't, because I had to address all of the emotional shit that was connected to I hate being a mum. And a lot of that for me was actually resentment, because I had kids that were challenging, and unworthiness. So many women are trapped in feeling unworthy, and that is ultimately why we keep cycling and in habits, because we're trying to feel worth externally.
Which is only the band-aid. It's not actually solving the problem. Look, I feel like
I'm about going to...
we're going down a deep hole here, which I totally believe, you know, it needs to be explored. So maybe we need to continue this conversation. You can come back and chat to us another time.
I'd love to.
So, yeah, it's been so insightful, and I think so needed to be heard, even just to start off and kick off the thought process for some people. But for others, you know, certainly taking action and starting to write things down and really allowing yourself to get connected with the actual deep thought that's happening underneath. And that takes a little bit of time, I suspect.
Yeah, a little bit of time and a little bit of courage, because it's not always pleasant. But if you want more for yourself, then whatever you're doing right now is going to continue to get you the same results that you've got. So in order for something to change, something needs to change, and that change has to start with you.
Well, look, I think that's the perfect sentence to lead into. Maybe that is the quote. You know, what is the mantra that you hold for yourself now that you can share for us?
Yeah, and I think that's it. You know, nothing changes if nothing changes.
Yeah.
But the change is only ever going to be superficial if you're looking to change the external. Change has to start within you.
Well said. All right. What is a book or a podcast or a resource that you've read recently that you can recommend to us? Now, you do have a book of your own. Please share that with us and any other resources.
I do. So, like I've mentioned a couple of times, Own Your BS is my own brand that now includes an international best-selling book. There's also a podcast of the same name and the online program. So if, you know, for the listeners who are listening and there's things resonating, you know, you can start on any of those three levels, depending on, you know, where your commitment lies, where your finances lie. The book is available on my website. Actually, if you go to ownyourbs.com, all of the resources are on that one website.
Perfect. And we'll certainly put the links to all of these things on our show notes on the podcast page. So, look, thank you so much. Now, did you have any other resource that that you can recommend?
I mean, obviously, I'm going to say read my book because there's some sort of and particularly if you're interested in the cycle stuff. So when I wrote my the book is a no-nonsense guide. I was sick to death of reading books that fluffed around for 400 pages and gave me at the end just a whole heap of useless information. So my book is a condensed version of everything that I know to help women to get onto the path of owning their BS. And it includes free shipping worldwide. So there's no excuse for you to stay stuck in your shit. If, however, you do want to like delve more into, say, the female cycle, if that's something that really interests you, it condensed a lot of what I learned from resources such as The Optimized Woman by Miranda Gray. I think that is a really great, you know, if you want something deeper than what's offered in my book, if you want to explore it a little bit more, check out The Optimized Woman, because she expands on what I talk about in my book so that you can identify what phases your cycle is in and what activities you can do in your world, both personal and business, to live your life as an optimized woman. So it's a really, really great starting point for cycle work.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you for giving us your time today and also for supporting me and my yellow balloon. That was super helpful.
You're very welcome.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Bree.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you have it. That wraps another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Now, I wanted to ask you, are you ready to escape your fully booked column so you can devote your time to actually growing your business? Maybe having a team you can trust to handle daily client care and management without constantly double checking. How about actually going on a 2-week holiday without sacrificing 2 weeks of income, let alone coming back to a list longer than when you left? If that's you, then it's time to join the Salon Owners Collective Hub, where you get all the training, resource, and support you need to get out from behind the chair and into a space of having the time to grow your team, expand your business, and skyrocket your income, all without working crazy hours to make it happen. Every month we have new trainings, Q&A coaching sessions, not to mention the daily support of fellow business owners who are right alongside you on the journey to growing a profitable salon. If you're ready to make greater freedom, bigger profits your priority, and it's time to raise your scissors in the air and declare that it's time to make a change, head to the salonownerscollective.com or to the link that are in our show notes on this episode to learn more about the Salon Owners Collective Hub and what you'll get if you come and join the community. And as always, thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you inside the hub.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective podcast on iTunes or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa, and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.